Hi, Dave Emmer here. Side 2 of For the Record program number 793, Miscellaneous Articles and Update, being recorded on May 18th of the year 2014. We left off on side 1 with discussion of Fraser Glenn Miller, a neo-Nazi and white supremacist, allegedly the killer of 3 people at a Jewish community center and retirement home in Kansas this past spring. He was inspired by the order, and we were discussing the publications of National Vanguard Books, which is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, a former client of Glenn Greenwald when he was an attorney. Another of the books published by the National Alliance that we have spoken about at some length over the years is a book called Serpent's Walk, also something of a teaching tool or political manifesto. Again, ostensibly a novel. It deals with the future. It is about the SS going underground at the end of World War II, saving up their capital, buying into the opinion-forming media, and after the U.S. is destroyed by a series of terrorist acts using weapons of mass destruction, the SS and Nazis take over the United States. In that context, we have been talking about the domination of English-language publishing and American publishing by the Bertelsmann firm. The Bertelsmann firm was the publisher for the SS in World War II. It also published a great many books for the Wehrmacht. It was headed up by a guy named Heinrich Mohn, who was also SS and helped to finance the SS as well. His son, Reinhard Mohn, had served in the elite Hermann Goering division and then succeeded his father as head of the company. We're going to talk about them and their continued forays into the publishing business. Before we do that, let me read an excerpt. We've spoken about this in the past. For those who might say, well, so what? World War II was a long time ago. We don't care. To give you an idea of how the Nazi ethics, so to speak, has been perpetuated in the person of the Bertelsmann Corporation, they're disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding, and some superficial work supposedly educating about the Holocaust, which sort of an attempt at public relations and putting lipstick on the pig, so to speak. There was an article in The Nation magazine of November 8, 1999. It's called Bertelsmann's Revisionist, unquote. It's by Hirsch, Fischler, F-I-S-C-H-L-E-R, and John Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. And it is about a guy named Dirk Bavendam, B-A-V-E-N-D-A-M-M. Bavendam was the official house historian for Bertelsmann, and he published a number of books, including a book blaming World War II on Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Jewish control of the media, and said that what Hitler did to the Jews, he did in reaction to Roosevelt's strategy against Germany. Again, blaming World War II on Franklin Delano Roosevelt and their Jewish control of Hollywood and the news media is, to say the least, a very creative explanation for World War II. And it is also more than a little interesting in the context of the fact that this fellow is the official house historian for the company that dominates English language publishing and that was the publisher for the SS in World War II, headed up by Heinrich Mohn, who was SS. Skipping down in this Nation story from 1999. A year later, Bavendam edited the firm's official history, which set forth the untrue story that the firm had resisted the Nazis and had been closed down by them. Mohn also asked Bavendam to write the authorized history of the Mohn family, published in 1986 under the title Bertelsmann, Mohn, and Schippel, Three Families, One Company. In his second book, Roosevelt's War, published in 1993 and reissued in 1998, Bavendam accuses the U.S. president of enacting a plan to start World War II. In the same book, he suggests that Hitler's threats in early 1939 against European Jewry were a reaction to Roosevelt's strategy against Germany. And that is pretty interesting stuff coming from the official house historian of the company that dominates English language publishing. And again, this should be seen against the background of Serpent's Walk. Bertelsmann continues to advance its presence in the media. The New York Times of April 29th of 2012 has an article by Eric Fauner, P-F-A-N-N-E-R, and Amy Chozick, C-H-O-Z-I-C-K. Random House and Penguin merger creates global giant, and it reads in part as follows. The book publishing industry is starting to get smaller in order to get stronger. The announcement on Monday that Random House and Penguin would merge narrows the business to a handful of big publishers and could set off a long-expected round of consolidation as the industry adapts to the digital marketplace. John Makinson, the chief executive of Penguin, who will serve as chairman of the new company, said that with consolidation inevitable, quote, we decided it was better to get in early rather than be a follower, unquote. In announcing the agreement, the European owners of Random House and Penguin, Bertelsmann and Pearson respectively, said Bertelsmann would control 53% of the combined entity and Pearson 47%. In a statement, Bertelsmann said the deal would most likely conclude in the second half of 2013 after approval from regulators. The merger will create the largest consumer book publisher in the world, with a global market share of more than 25% and a book list that includes contemporary bestsellers like Random House's 50 Shades of Grey and Penguin's backlist of classics from authors like George Orwell. And again, note that 53% of the new company will be owned by Bertelsmann. It's also worth noting that Pearson also publishes the Financial Times, the English language version of which is controlled by a German company. So I believe it's controlled by a subsidiary of Bertelsmann as well. In this, I want to note the following. Bertelsmann is also increasing its presence in the music industry as well. Another story that broke while I was ill and was not able to record. We're doing some catch-up here, hence miscellaneous articles and updates. This also from the New York Times, this from March 1st of 2013, an article by Ben Cesario, capital S-I-S-A-R-I-O. It's titled, Bertelsmann Acquires Full Control of BMG Music Company, and it reads in part as follows. Bertelsmann, the 178-year-old German media giant that has been trying to remake itself for the digital age, announced on Friday that it would take control of BMG Rights Management, the music company it restarted in 2008, in a deal that values BMG at $1.4 billion. Bertelsmann said it would buy the 51% of BMG that it did not own from its partner in the venture, Kohlberg Kravis Roberts. The companies did not disclose financial terms, but a person with direct knowledge of the deal who spoke on the condition of anonymity said the purchase price was $700 to $800 million, including the assumption of debt. The deal signals a full return to the music business for Bertelsmann, whose other media properties include Random House and the magazine publisher Gruner & Jahr. And again, note the tremendous presence in the music business now of BMG, which was also buying the rights to some of the Beatles catalog in 2009, just after Michael Jackson died. He had previously owned it. More about the control of the media, Newsweek magazine, which had, by the way, before I leave the subject of Bertelsmann, it will be interesting to see if ultimately Bertelsmann buys full control of the new publishing company. It now controls 53%, and Pearson, through Penguin, control 47%. It will be interesting to see if the cuddling and munching, which is described in the Serpent's Walk book, takes place here, and whether ultimately Bertelsmann acquires full control of that company. Again, that controls 25% of all books published worldwide. Bertelsmann already dominates English language publishing. Newsweek magazine, which had gone under some time ago, has been revised, and the company that controls it is more than a little interesting. It is one of the ministries of a Korean-born pastor named David Zhang, J-A-N-G. He runs a Christian sect called the Community, which has been accused of being a mind-control cult and was the focal point of an unsuccessful libel suit. Well, actually, it was not. It was the focal point of a libel suit in Japan. Some people had charged the Community with being a front for the Unification Church and had alleged that the Community subjected its members to mind control. That suit was unsuccessful. I don't know very much about the suit, and I know nothing about Japanese civil law. But what is interesting, certainly, is that some of the practices of the Community are reminiscent of, they echo some of the mind control techniques in which the Unification Church appears to engage in. And the publisher itself, or the head of the ministry that owns Newsweek, the publisher publishes Newsweek, David Zhang, does have a history of participation in the Unification Church. An article about this appeared in Mother Jones magazine of May, the issue of May and June of 2014, an article by Ben Dooley, D-O-O-L-E White, called "Who's Behind Newsweek?" It reads in part as follows. 2 days after Barack Obama won re-election, I met a young Chinese woman whom I will call Anne in the basement cafe at the San Francisco Public Library. Anne worked part-time and gave a large portion of her earnings to a group called the Community, unquote, a Christian sect led by a charismatic Korean pastor named David Zhang, capital J-A-N-G. After joining the group in her late teens, Anne had spent more than 7 years working in its ministries, organizations, and businesses that were run by Zhang's disciples. With short hair and large glasses, Anne was now in her late 20s but looked younger. She said she rarely had enough money for small luxuries like coffee. We chatted with a mutual friend while we waited for her husband, Caleb, who also worked for one of Zhang's ministries, the International Business Times, the flagship publication of an eponymous online news company that would 9 months later become the new owner of Newsweek magazine. Skipping down. David Zhang also has a history with Moon's Unification Church. In 2013, a Japanese court resolved an almost six-year-long libel case that Christian Today, a Zhang-founded website, filed against Makoto Yamaya, Y-A-M-A-Y-A, a Salvation Army major. Yamaya had claimed that the Community was part of the Unification Church and that Christian Today had mind-controlled its employees. The court found that these charges had no basis, but it also found that Zhang had joined the Unification Church student group as a young man, eventually rising to the rank of executive director of another church-affiliated student organization. He then went on to a church-run theological institute and helped manage the transition when it became Sun Moon University in 1993, subsequently leading the church. Four former members tell me that Zhang often spoke of his time in Moon's church, including his marriage by Moon in a 1975 mass wedding, an event also affirmed by the Japanese court. So again, it is more than a little interesting that the new publisher of Newsweek magazine certainly has a background in the Unification Church. The practices of the Community, at least as related in this article, are reminiscent of the practices of the Unification Church, so I don't think it is unfair to ask the question about whether perhaps the Community represents something of a sub rosa or underground extension of the Unification Church. In AFA program number 14, and in For the Record program number 291, we took a look at considerable evidence that the Unification Church represents an extension through the decades and around the world of the Japanese patriotic societies that brought fascism to Japan in the 1930s and were a key element of Japanese intelligence, national security activity, and covert operations. Again, For the Record 291 contains a good discussion of that. I would note that the Unification Church also controls the Washington Times newspaper and also controls UPI. If, in fact, some of the suppositions in which we have engaged are accurate, if David Jiang is, in fact, something of a sub rosa operative for the Unification Church, as was charged by a Japanese Salvation Army worker who then was successfully sued, I would note, by David Jiang, then if that is the case with a capital I, this would perhaps place Newsweek under the Unification Church control. By the way, David Jiang now forcefully denounces the Unification Church for having rejected Jesus, which they did, by the way. So, again, it is certainly something that I think is food for thought and grounds for further research about the possibility that Newsweek and David Jiang's, quote, community, unquote, may be a sub rosa sort of covert wing of the Unification Church. One of the cable broadcasters that has achieved gravitas in the U.S. now is Al Jazeera. They now have an English language division. For some time, Pacifica Radio was featuring Al Jazeera's broadcasts. And this is also interesting because Al Jazeera is controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood. That is an Islamic fascist organization that was begun in the 20s. It was allied with the Axis in World War II. And then in the post-war period, because of its doctrinaire anti-communist stance, they were utilized by various intelligence services, including and especially the CIA, as anti-communist cadre. And there is very strong evidence that the Muslim Brotherhood controls Al Jazeera. And some of the evidence in that regard, by the way, something we will cover in future programs, is the fact that Qatar, the Gulf country that finances Al Jazeera and in which it is headquartered, has actually begun a second competing state-owned broadcast network because of the overt Muslim Brotherhood control of Al Jazeera. And as you listen to the Muslim Brotherhood control of Al Jazeera, just bear in mind this is what now is being broadcast into American homes and was for quite some time being broadcast on the Pacifica Radio Network. It is basically a Muslim Brotherhood subsidiary, and the Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamic fascist organization. Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Watch of July 9th of 2013. By the way, this blog feeds along the lower right-hand page, front page of the SpitfireList.com website. This contains a story, again, from July 9th of 2013. Al Jazeera Egypt staff resign over orders to, quote, favor, unquote, the Muslim Brotherhood. And again, many of the staff members of Al Jazeera's Egyptian bureau resigned as a protest against the overt and explicit pro-Muslim Brotherhood editorial stance of Al Jazeera. This article reads in part, Gulf media are reporting that 22 members of the Al Jazeera Egyptian bureau have resigned in protest over what they say were instructions from the management to, quote, favor the Muslim Brotherhood, unquote. According to a Gulf News report, the news channel Al Jazeera Mabasher Mizir, MUBASHERMISR, saw 22 members of its staff resign on Monday in Egypt over what they alleged was coverage that was out of sync with real events in Egypt. Anchor Karem Karim Mahmoud, MAHMOUD, announced that the staff had resigned in protest against what he called, quote, biased coverage, unquote, of the events in Egypt by the Qatari broadcaster. Skipping down, Mahmoud added that the management used to instruct each staff member to favor the Muslim Brotherhood. He said that, quote, there are instructions to us to telecast certain news, unquote. Hagag Salama, first name H-A-G-G-A-G, last name capital S-A-L-A-M-A, a correspondent of the network in Luxor, had resigned on Sunday, accusing it of, quote, airing lies and misleading viewers, unquote. Skipping down again. Meanwhile, four Egyptian members of editorial staff at Al Jazeera's headquarters in Doha, Qatar, resigned in protest against what they termed a, quote, biased editorial policy, unquote, pertaining to the events in Egypt. Alaa al-Ayoti, a news producer, told Gulf News by phone. Again, the reporter who alleged, who reported about the four Egyptian members of Al Jazeera staff at the network's headquarters in Qatar had resigned in protest. That name is capital A-L-A hyphen A, second name capital A-L, last name capital A-I-O-T-I. Another story about the Brotherhood and its control of Al Jazeera, again from Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Watch of July 11th of 2013. This, by the way, blog feeds along the lower right-hand side of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. Why does Al Jazeera love a hateful Islamic extremist, unquote, skipping down. Qatar pumped a lot of money into Mohamed Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt, and for what? The Qatari royal family should sue the Brotherhood for malfeasance. So much hope was riding on Morsi's experiment in political Islam. Although Qatar spreads risk around a bit and has provided millions of dollars to Islamists in Syria and to the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas, now there's an investment in the future, Morsi represented its main chance to advance the cause of Islamic fundamentalism. Again, noting here that Qatar had also actively financed the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and Morsi's government, and that the Al Jazeera network headquartered in Qatar and financed, basically something of an extension of the Qatari government, was open in its bias for the Brotherhood, prompting the resignation and criticism of Al Jazeera by much of its Egyptian editorial and reporter staff. Skipping down in this post, the millions of Egyptians who rose up against Morsi's rule also aired their feelings about Al Jazeera's breathless pro-Muslim Brotherhood coverage. The harsh criticism directed at the network prompted Egyptian reporters to expel Al Jazeera reporters from a recent news conference. So note that Egyptian reporters had also expelled members of Al Jazeera from a recent press conference. I would also note that exiled members of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood have actually had their hotel suites in Qatar paid for by Al Jazeera. This is a Washington Post story from November 5th of 2013. It's by Abigail Hausloner, H-A-U-S-L-O-H-N-E-R, headlined, Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood Finds Havens Abroad. And it reads in part as follows, skipping down. Several of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood exiles live temporarily in hotel suites paid for by Qatar's state-run Arabic satellite network Al Jazeera, and it is in those suites and hotel lobbies that the future of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood and more broadly the strategy and ideology of political Islam in the country may well be charted. So again, the relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and Qatar and Al Jazeera is a very open one and involves not only Qatar's funding of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood government of Mohamed Morsi, but the open bias by Al Jazeera in favor of the Brotherhood, something that prompted resignation of much of Egypt's, the Egyptian staff of Al Jazeera, and exiled members of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood are being put up in hotel suites by Al Jazeera. I'm going to take a look. That's an interesting exchange of comments that appeared following an article about a fellow who was an editor, a fellow named David Foster Wallace, who used to work for the Atlantic, worked for the Atlantic magazine. And in the comments on this, there was one by a fellow named London Lee. I worked for the Atlantic when Wallace wrote a terrific feature for them about talk radio. According to our managing editor, he was a sweetheart to deal with. True, whenever the books section reviewed something about World War II or the Holocaust, which was often, BMW pulled their ads for that issue. Skipping down, and another response, another comment by London Lee. They were just sensitive about giving their given their history. I was in the art department, so couldn't tell you any details. It just became a running joke. Oh, Ben has reviewed another World War II book, and sales will be pissed. And this again about Mr. Wallace. And again, according to the comments from former Atlantic employees, BMW was pulling ads when they wrote something about World War II or the Holocaust. This is interesting not only against the background of Serpent's Walk, also against the background of BMW. We have dealt at great length and in detail with the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, authored by Paul Manning, the CBS correspondent who reported the surrender of Germany on the CBS radio network. He was a protege of Edward R. Murrow and began his investigation of Martin Bormann and the Bormann Organization at the behest of Edward R. Murrow. It was financed. His work was financed by the CBS radio network, which would not go with the story, and ultimately, after a number of publishing contracts were canceled because of pressure by the Bormann Group, Paul Manning was able to publish Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. And in For the Record 155, we looked at some articles by Paul Manning in which he discussed the fact that the Bormann Organization's executives, many of its key people, are the descendants of top Nazi officials. And that is interesting in light of the following from Bloomberg News of January 28th of 2013, an article by David DeJong, D-E capital J-O-N-G. Nazi Goebbels' step-grandchildren are hidden billionaires. In the spring of 1945, Harold Quandt, Q-U-A-N-D-T, a 23-year-old officer in the German Luftwaffe, was being held as a prisoner of war by Allied forces in the Libyan port city of Benghazi when he received a farewell letter from his mother, Magda Goebbels, the wife of Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels, skipping down. Quandt was released from captivity in 1947. 7 years later, he and his half-brother Herbert, Harold was the only remaining child from Magda Goebbels' first marriage, would inherit the industrial empire built by their father, Günther Quandt, which had produced Mauser firearms and anti-aircraft missiles for the Third Reich's war machine. Among their most valuable assets at the time was a stake in car manufacturer Daimler AG. They bought a part of Bayerische Motorenwerke AG, or BMW, a few years later. And they have cemented their control over the Bavarian Motor Works. And skipping down, of the step-grandchildren, the four sisters inherited about 1.5 billion Deutschmarks after the death of their mother Inga in 1978, according to the family's sanctioned biography, Die Quants. I would also note that in Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, there is a section of the famous Red House documents from 1944, in which the Bormann Organization was formally established and at which the Third Reich went underground. From Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, we read the following. He, that is Dr. Heinrich Bosse of the SS, added that German industrialists must be prepared to finance the continuation of the Nazi Party, which would be forced to go underground just as had the Marquis in France, skipping down. Dr. Bosse closed the meeting observing that after the defeat of Germany, the Nazi Party recognizes that certain of its best-known leaders will be condemned as war criminals. However, in cooperation with the industrialists, it is arranging to place its less conspicuous but most important members with various German factories as technical experts or members of its research and designing offices. One of the architects of the final solution and a top aide to Adolf Eichmann, a guy named Alois Brunner, was operating under the cover of the Quandt firm in Syria, as we discussed in AFA program number 3, material from Galen Spy of the Century by E.H. Cookridge. This concludes For the Record program number 793, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, being recorded on May 18th of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.